The first one is by April Pace, and April is the vice president for, oh, I didn't ask you how to pronounce it, Cardea, which provides training, capacity building, research and evaluation services to health and human service organizations. She has more than 25 years of management and advocacy experience in reproductive health, teen pregnancy prevention, and reproductive justice, and she also directs a statewide initiative to advance sustainable implementation of school-based sexuality education. So, April Pace, please join us.
Thank you. It's a privilege to be here and also to have not only an overview of this particular project, but also to have a case study. And I also, my colleague that will be following, Jenny Palmer, will go in more depth about the application of this project in her state in particular, and want to give a shout out to a surprise grantee that's here, Kim Nolte, with the Georgia Campaign for Adolescent Pregnancy Prevention. Oh, and some other colleagues are here as well, so it's great to see them here. I'm going to be talking about a very innovative and fun project that is being implemented now in 9 states. How many of you here are health educators and actually, if I could get a quick show of hands, and work in schools? Okay, a few of you. So that's the primary focus of this particular project that's funded, and I'm going to spend some time talking about the strategies and challenges of working with schools, best practices and some strategies for targeting and work implementing sex ed in the schools, and then what does sustainability and institutionalization of this particular process look like? Because we believe that once this funding, there's a lot of federal funding through PrEP, as you mentioned by some of our panelists here, as well as Teen Pregnancy Prevention Initiative and just other initiatives throughout the United States. And we know that that funding is not going to be there a long time. So part of this is how do we sustain and build capacity of this type of education in schools, because we know it has such positive youth outcomes. So the overall goal of this, again, is to look at different ways, and we'll discuss, it's looking at 9 different states and the way it's implemented there, that either have sex positive laws in place or policies that mandate if sex ed is taught in the schools, then it must be medically accurate, age appropriate, and culturally appropriate as well. Comprehensive sex ed, as many of you know, is education that addresses both abstinence and, at a minimum, the medically inaccurate information on contraceptives in particular. And it also has to be developmentally appropriate and also focus on topics, some of which have been mentioned by the panelists already, on healthy relationships, decision-making, assertiveness, skill-building, and resisting social and peer pressure. As I mentioned, this project in particular is looking at institutionalization of sex ed in the schools, and it's focusing really on how does this become a convention or norm in the schools with all of the necessary support such as policy, community engagement, human resource, and financial in order to allow this to exist over time. These are the 9 states in which this project is funded. And we're pleased to have 5 foundations that are providing support that allow us creativity and innovation in the implementation of this project. The rest of the time, I'm going to talk a little bit about the WISE, what we affectionately refer to as the WISE method, and then end by highlighting some key strategies and practices in this toolkit that we hope to be distributed soon, and many of the factors that I'll outline here have also been mentioned again as with some of the other panelists. This project has been divided into 2 phases. The first phase, we identified 4 key components that lead toward institutionalization. The first is planning, allowing us to do an environmental scan, what is going on in the schools, what's going on in the communities, and some level of documentation, not just walking into the schools and trying to deliver evidence-based or evidence-informed interventions. Identify districts to actually assess. You'll hear me mention in a few slides that some schools are ready, some districts are ready, and there are others that aren't. And so it's a great utilization of resource to use an organizational capacity readiness model to target that low-hanging fruit and to get moving fairly quickly and then eventually build community support to move this intervention into schools later. Engagement. We need to have champions, administrators, school board members, community members involved. That will also help with sustainability. And then again, assessing readiness and capacity to implement. Having a policy in place, in Washington State in particular, when we went in to do assessments, we found that some school districts had a policy that was implemented in 1975 and has not been updated. There were others that had one that was implemented, say, for example, in 2010, but still the school is not that engaged or focused on the policy. But the policy is a great advocacy and implementation place to start. And then last is actually implementation, which I won't go into a lot of detail, but a lot of work is going into actually selecting the curricula and then implementing it in the classroom. And I'll talk a little bit more about certain professional development support that has to be in place to have effective implementation of sex ed in the classroom. I'll talk a little bit now about the actual toolkit. We were able through this project to document how do we support institutionalization of comprehensive sex ed in schools. As I mentioned, there were four phases, and in the second phase of this project, we added a fifth and were able to document a fifth phase that helped move this process along. I mentioned the planning and environmental scan, school district engagement. The community awareness and mobilization was a key component, and in Washington State, we worked with the school district incredibly resistant to any kind of implementation. It took a great deal of time, but we worked with local CBOs to get them to try to advocate with the school board to get school policy implemented. And then once that mobilization took place and the change took place, they were a great support to teachers and administrators who were positive about having this implemented. Of course, having school district policy and then actually having the implementation in place is critical. I'll spend my last eight slides here talking about some key questions that are highlighted in the toolkit. The first is, what does successful completion of conducting a planning and environmental scan look like? So again, having an understanding of state and district comprehensive sex ed policies, not making assumptions that everyone is aware of, that these things are in place. The funding landscape is critical. We found that one of the barriers is for teachers to go out and get trained in curricula. There wasn't substitute pay, and that continues to be an ongoing problem in implementation. Having partners there to engage in working together. Many communities use health departments and Planned Parenthood to come into the schools and deliver the education, but there are also many communities that are a little resistant to having them come in, so having a variety of partners there as well. The completion of the environmental scan looks, again, at getting these linkages in place with different agencies. We're fortunate in Washington State through our PREP funding to leverage PREP as well as this WISE funding. And so there's funding to our Department of Ed, also known as our Department of Superintendent for Public Instruction, Department of Social and Health Services, DOH, and community-based organizations. A very effective collaboration, not in place in all states, but certainly has made a difference. Partnering with DASH, the Division of Adolescent School Health HIV/AIDS Coordinator, has supported this effort as well. Again, I mentioned this, the community mobilization phase, leveraging relationships, and really looking on critical areas rather than nice-haves. Successful CSE may not necessarily mean that it's being implemented simultaneously in all places. We find that some places it's being implemented in middle schools, high schools. Getting it in there and having it started is a great step in the right direction. And also recognizing there are some districts that just are not going to be ready, so you need to focus your targeted and limited resources on those that are. We also recognize that evidence-based interventions in certain curricula is not going to fit everyone, and many of you have mentioned that you pull different components of curricula together, and having that flexibility is important, and just not relying on one particular group or person to help you implement this. You need really your community engaged. Again, I mentioned leadership around state policies, making sure that there is an awareness of that and an understanding about what this means when you're actually implementing, and then also affirming or updating your actual law or policy there. As I mentioned, some of them are a tad archaic in some of these places. Adherence to CSE, how is that being monitored in the schools? Actually having this in job descriptions, who's going to teach it? Is it the health teacher? Is it the science teacher? Is it the gym teacher, the physical ed teacher? And if so, they're going to need a lot of education and support because often have discomfort around sexuality, and then, you know, working on their norms and values around sex is complicating things. And then allowing them out of the schools to get professional development is challenging. Actually selecting, adopting, and implementing a evidence-based or evidence-formed curricula is quite challenging, and many of you in the room actually help do a crosswalk or walk through curricula to have it match up with your actual state goals and education standards. Making sure, again, that teachers get these resources, and again acknowledging that ideally you'd like us to have this implemented in the classrooms across multiple grade levels. But again, starting someplace is definitely better than the total resistance we see in some communities. A quality improvement or assurance process, ideally having a cadre of trainers in your state. Again, some of the programs I acknowledge, like Kim Nolte or some of the other programs that are here, is important. And then ideally having some dedicated funding to curriculum purchase, which I could spend 15 minutes on alone, the controversies around that. So I'm going to close by highlighting two things. This has been just one of the most rewarding projects in our state, working actually with the districts. In our particular state, we're at the point of working with our dedicated solely with our Office of Superintendent Public Instruction and all nine of our educational service districts, which serve our 295 school districts, and this is very similar in some of the other states as well. One superintendent said, this project brought the four C's to our sexual health education program: content, consistency, connection, and confidence. And finally, a school district administrator said, it, meaning our readiness assessment when we went in to work with them, laid the groundwork because it gives us a picture of where we were, where we wanted to go, and what gaps existed. So it allowed us to do a certain level of empowerment with certain districts that were really ready, and that was quite rewarding. Thank you.
Thank you very much.